Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Been around us all season or just for a few weeks, you know what today is. This is a day we dedicate to the football. It's going to be a huge factor in this game for sure. These are two really good teams that have high regard for the ball on offense and know how to go after it on defense. Both teams had 11 turnovers during the season, which happened to be the fewest in the NFL, so they're going to be tough to come by. When you go through a difficult loss or a challenging time, you do gain some resiliency. You do gain some toughness. When we lost to Kansas City at home, it was one of those moments where, you know, I was anxious to see how we'd respond. Where I felt that shift was the unconditional support for one another. When you get to that spot where I'm just going to go battle for the guy right next to me, it got a little stronger. And then as the end of the regular season happened, we really challenged the team to find, is there a part of your game you can improve upon during that bye? And that's where another shift happened in the postseason.
The addition of some players on our team, guys like Alex Mack coming into our offensive line, and Taylor Gabriel, Mohamed Sanu, Aldrick Robinson at the wide receiver position. You talk about two young tight ends for us, Josh Perkins and Austin Hooper. When you put a lot of talent around you, it makes it, you know, easier to make plays, and you know, our supporting cast has done a great job this year.
We have a good team. We have a lot of good players. Unfortunately, Rob hasn't been with us here for a few weeks. If he was, nobody would be working harder than Rob. But we're a team, and we have a lot of good players. And whichever players are called on to step up and give their best, that's what they've done. We'll do that on Sunday, too. And look, you've seen us defensively, you know, transform from a 3-4 to a 4-3 to a nickel team, from a zone team to a man team, a cover two team to a cover one team, you know, so forth through the years. So it's not so much about what particular player you're looking for, I think, as the process of sorting through and selecting and bringing them into your program and building and indoctrinating the program or orienting the player into your program to get the most production out of them.
With only 70 plays left in the season, you know, you got to make sure everything that's there is of critical importance. You know, you don't often have the luxury of all this extra time. You know, I think we've used it wisely. You know, it's a big challenge. They got a good scheme and they got good players, so nothing's going to be easy. You know, ultimately, we have to be prepared to win a game. We know the challenge that's ahead of us, and it only it's going to get more hectic as we get close to the game.
I really like the way their back end has improved. They were very young early in the season, and they started to mature as the year went on. But Vic Beasley and Dwight Freeney, they have to do a great job of being able to create pressure without blitzing Tom Brady. That's going to be the key to success, because, you know, when you bring pressure, especially 5- and 6-man pressures, you know, Tom historically has picked you apart. If there's something that you're doing that's having success, you're going to see immediately change on the sideline. They do a great job of adjusting throughout the course of the game, dealing with different personnel packages that Atlanta's going to be throwing at them. You give Coach Belichick and his staff 2 weeks to prepare for somebody, you know, you have to think that they'll be ready to go.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed. Welcome to the Extravaganza on a Friday afternoon edition. And you know what that means. It is free-for-all Friday time right here on Toledo's Sports Leader. Wow, heavy, heavy Super Bowl-laden montage to start the show. Especially a show that I'm going to start with basketball on. But that's okay, because we are going to be heavy, heavy Super Bowl in the two-hour conversation we're going to have this afternoon. As a matter of fact, coming up in about a half an hour, maybe a little bit less, we're going to talk to Adam Stites, who is with the SB Nation. He is an NFL writer for SB Nation. Going to talk to him about the Super Bowl from a nonpartisan perspective that he can offer. I guess we're all nonpartisan, right? It's the Patriots. Well, maybe that's not true either. It's the Patriots and the Falcons, and we don't live in Boston or Atlanta, so we are all nonpartisan. But the truth is, did you see the polls that show that some 73% of Americans who were surveyed are rooting against the Patriots? I mean, everybody hates what, you know, a lot of people just have come to know as the criminal, you know, family, the crime family, the international crime syndicate known as the New England Patriots. People are just anti-patriot, and I understand. I have been for most of the last 15 years or more. So At any rate, we don't have a partisan view, really, but other than that whole anti-patriot thing. But we're going to analyze it as fairly as we can. Adam Stites will do that at 3:35. Then Scott Petrak will join us to do it and have a conversation at about 4:05. Before and after that, your calls are welcome, of course, at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. And we'll get you up and on the radio. But I am going to start with basketball because I have missed this conversation for the last 2 days. On our Wednesday program, we had a special program, which we have planned every year, which is our National Signing Day special, in which we cover all of the local colleges that we care about and the local athletes that we follow to see where everybody went, see what kind of recruiting classes. And that extended really into yesterday's program for a large part. And then college basketball yesterday in the last half hour of the program. So we didn't have a lot of time to do what I really feel like we need to do. And I need to do. It's the biggest story in the NBA at a time when everything is boring right now. A fight, a verbal, you know, tete-a-tete between one of the 50 greatest players of all time, Charles Barkley, and a guy who will be named one of the 50 greatest players of all time and certainly is probably in the top 10 of that, if not the top 5 of that by the time it's all said and done, LeBron James. You get a battle going between those two legendary figures, it is worth our time. And it's something I've missed out on talking about for the last couple of days. So with that in mind, I want to start playing some audio. And I want to go back to the original. Now, you know what the original was. I'm not going to play all of this. But you know that the original complaint was that Charles Barkley saying that LeBron James was whiny. That LeBron James is trying to get too much in terms of talent. Why does he always have to be the favorite? You don't want to compete. You don't want to take these guys on yourself. Why do you have to be so whiny about this? You know, I need a backup point guard. I need another playmaker. Well, you already have a lot of great talent, he said. So LeBron James, of course, on what was it, Monday, I believe, put Charles Barkley on blast. But in the process, and I pointed this out, in the process of putting Charles, you know, back, quote-unquote, in his place. And Cavs fans loved it. Cavs fans, LeBron fans loved it because he said, I'm not the one who threw a man through a plate glass window, and I'm not the one who spit on a little kid, and I'm not the one who ran up a gambling debt in Vegas. Which is clear evidence that LeBron James simply Googled Charles Barkley and looked for bad stuff and then memorized it and then gave it to a reporter to say, he's not going to ruin my legacy. This is this guy. He's a bad guy. Okay? I said at the time on the radio here, I said, you know what? LeBron certainly has a right to express his opinion about Charles Barkley, the man. He certainly has a right to express his opinion about the personal, you know, off the court stuff of Charles Barkley. Fine. But you know what you're not doing there, LeBron, is you're not addressing the question. You're not addressing the criticism. You're not addressing the, you know, the condemnation that Charles Barkley made on national TV and radio about you being whiny. About how you need to have all of the best players at every position in order to win championships, and you're not willing to go to battle with an all-star point guard, a superstar point guard, quite frankly, an all-star forward, a B-plus maybe level player like Tristan Thompson, a sharpshooter extraordinaire like J.R. Smith when he comes back healthy, of course. You're the defending champions, another sharpshooter in Kyle Korver. How much more do you need, is what Charles Barkley, and LeBron didn't respond to that at all. So he ripped Barkley personally instead of responding to the actual issues that Charles Barkley raised, which led to this response, and this is selected portions of Charles Barkley's response to LeBron James on a Chicago radio station. Here we go.
Well, I think when you don't like the message, you just kill the messenger. And that still does, some of those things he said about me are correct. That still does not make my message incorrect. I thought he was really whiny and complaining the last couple of weeks talking about he got no help. I'm like, dude, you just won the championship. And it's the middle of the season and you're just bashing your teammates. I think that wasn't right. You know, you keep saying, we're not in it. We're not that good. I'm like, dude, y'all are the reigning defending NBA champs. And, you know, I appreciate Tristan Thompson actually having the stones to speak something. But he's the only one. The rest of them are just so intimidated. I mean, and anybody in that circle, you know, they're so intimidated, but I'm not intimidated at all. I've said the guy is the best player in the world. I've said he's a wonderful guy. I'm not sure how that constitutes hating just because I see he's coming out bashing his teammates every day, and he's got Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, they're defending champions. I don't think I thought it was inappropriate and for him to talk about it every single day about how bad his team was. And I think that's a fair criticism.
When I say the words game, set, and match, Barkley, there's a reason why. Because virtually everything that Charles Barkley said in that interview, I have said on this radio program. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Charles Barkley is listening to me. He has no idea who I am. It's fine. My point is we see things the same way. We see eye to eye. Great minds think alike. I said all of those words on the radio show. I said that the issue here, LeBron James didn't even address, is his whininess and his dressing down of his teammates publicly the day after. That post-game meltdown he had after the loss to the Pelicans, minus Anthony Davis. I sat here in front of this microphone, or behind it, depending on your perspective, but I sat here and said to you very directly, it's wrong of him to go bashing his teammates. He's calling out their effort, and then he's calling out their talent and their ability, saying, we're not good enough. We need help. Kyrie and me got to do it all. That is completely disrespectful. It does not help the team come together and build chemistry to try to defend a championship. It's wrong. Not to mention it sounds whiny and complaining. And I said that on the air. And then Charles Barkley went and said that. And then, of course, LeBron blasted him. So Barkley came right back and repeated it. Game, set, and match, Barkley. Now, in response to Charles Barkley, the second response around now, here comes LeBron James. Post-game comments after the win two nights ago, I believe it was, over the who did they just beat down a couple of nights ago?
Jim Minnesota.
Bushler. Minnesota, that's right. Kevin Love didn't play against his former team.
He
that
will,
night.
By the way, play on Saturday, but yes, that
and
is
that's
correct.
Good to know. The back spasms are starting to clear up, hopefully. And
MRI came back negative on any structural things.
That's great to hear. Okay, so anyway, after the Minnesota beatdown, LeBron James is naturally asked again about his response to Barkley, and this was LeBron's response.
This business with Barkley, can that ever become a distraction?
No. A distraction for what?
To anything. I don't know. Just people asking you about it or...
People don't ask me about it, and I don't read about it. I didn't even read about what I said. I know what I said, and I meant it. I don't know what he said. I don't get involved in it, so it's no distraction.
Game, set, match, Barkley. If you believe LeBron James when he says, I don't even know what he said. I don't read about it. I don't even read about what I said. I know what I said and I stand by it, but I didn't read about it. If you believe that, stand on your head and spin. Because you know what? Nobody believes that mess. The reporter said, do you think this can be a distraction for what? Why? I don't even pay attention to it. Are you kidding? There's a reason why you ranted against Charles Barkley on Monday, because you do pay attention to criticism. You have very, very thin skin. It bothers you when anybody dares question the king. And you know what? It bothers a lot of your supporters, too. But you heard Charles Barkley the first time. That's why you looked up Google, went on Google and looked up Charles Barkley and decided to list so many of his mistakes in the past. So, yeah, you listened to him, and I guarantee you that you listened to him or read about it after you ripped him and his response, which was, you were being whiny, and nothing you said about me in my personal life changes your whininess. It's true. Barkley credited LeBron James as being the best player in the world. Barkley credited LeBron James as maybe being a top 10 player all time. Barkley credited LeBron James with being a good man, a good guy, a good person. And as he said last night on TNT when we finally got to see him on the national stage again, and not just on a local radio station, Barkley once again made the point. LeBron is a good guy, and he can say what he wants about me personally, but the only thing I said about him was basketball related, and guess what? I was right. Here's Chuck Barkley last night on TNT.
Number one, I have no problem with what LeBron said. I have no problem. Everything's not true, but most of that is true. I've did some stupid things in my life. That being said, I've been doing this job for 15, 16 years. I have never said anything personal about a guy, and I'm never going to. ever. All my criticism on any player or comments on any team is strictly about basketball. What I said was,
I'm going to stop player. That there. I want to stop that there. Because that's huge. And he's right. He's not talking about LeBron James as a person. He's talking about basketball. And he's talking about criticizing his team on the basketball court. He's talking about criticizing his teammates' effort and their ability on the basketball court. And criticizing the front office for not getting him enough players on the basketball court. It's not about personal stuff off the court the way he listed about Charles Barkley. So in other words, you know what Charles Barkley did here? Charles Barkley took the high road. He was LeBron James made Barkley out to be the villain with the Monday rant. Barkley turned this around on him and said, I've never said anything about him personally. This is strictly business. This is strictly basketball. And that's a big step for Barkley and, to me, a point on his side of the ledger. More?
What I said was, I'm the best player in the world, which he is. He has Kyrie Irving, who's an all-star. He has Kevin Love, who's an all-star. And he has Tristan Thompson, who's a terrific player. I take my chances against anybody. I don't need any help if I got those guys. That would be my personal opinion. I stick by that. Him saying they're top-heavy, everybody wants. I know, I'm pretty sure Carmelo would take those three guys. I'm pretty sure Russell Westbrook would take those three guys. But, like I say, I'm never going to get personal.
It's a great point. And it's an absolutely accurate point. Carmelo Anthony, the other league superstars who wish they had an all-star point guard like Kyrie Irving to run with, an all-star power forward like Kevin Love to run with, a 20-11 night guy, a 21-22 and 13-14 many night guy, and Tristan Thompson, a 10-rebound a night guy, usually with 6 or 7 on the offensive glass to give you more chances to win. Yeah, and then, you know, he didn't even mention JR and a huge role that he played winning that championship last year. Yeah, I guarantee you those other stars would like, and they would love to be top heavy with those guys and then fill in the bottom of the roster. More from Charles Barkley last night.
Do I take exception to it, Ernie? I've done some stupid things in my life. I have to live with that. But I didn't. When you say, in our position, when you say stuff, people going to come back at you. Like I say, everything. Like, first of all, as my friends, I got great friends. Number one, I flunked Spanish in high school. And I lost Jeopardy to Martha Stewart. He left out a couple of things that I had did wrong in my life.
Self-deprecation goes a long way. And rather than be self-deprecating, LeBron chose to attack Charles Barkley personally off the court. And Barkley's self-deprecation just further disarms LeBron James.
But like I say, I've did some stupid things in my life. That does not make my argument less valid. Like I say.
Bam. That's it right there. That, in a nutshell, is the story.
That does not make my argument less valid.
I did some stupid things 25 years ago in my life, but does that change the fact that LeBron James is calling out his teammates?
That does not make my argument less valid.
I've done some stupid things in my life. Does that mean LeBron James is not whining and saying he needs better players around him to try to win another championship?
That does not make my argument less valid.
He's right. There's no way to dispute that. His argument is valid, and LeBron did nothing to argue it.
Like I say, I'm pretty sure Carmelo Anthony, who's a hell of a player, would love to have Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, and Tristan Thompson. Same thing with Russell Westbrook. But like I say, my argument with LeBron was strictly basketball related.
And that's how it's supposed to be. And I know there's a lot of Cavs fans listening right now who are probably like, screw you, bull crap, the king is right, yada. And that's fine. But I'm telling you, in Team Bron versus Team Barkley, in this matter, I am full on Team Barkley because he is right. LeBron said nothing to defuse the criticism about basketball that he made against LeBron James. All LeBron did is say, this guy's a bad guy. He once said he wasn't a role model. He once spit and hit a kid. He once pushed somebody through a window. He once ran up gambling debts in Vegas. None of that addresses the issue. Charles Barkley is right.
I've met LeBron James probably 10 times in my life. We have shaken hands and said hello. We do not have to be friends. I'm not friends with most of these young guys. But that being said, that does not mean that we have to say positive stuff about them all the time. I do understand they are really sensitive to today's players.
Would you like to sit down with LeBron James and find a common ground or clear the air or
Ernie,
or understand?
Anybody who thinks my comments were unfair, I don't think they're unfair. Like I say, Carmelo Anthony doesn't have any help. Russell Westbrook don't have a lot of help. He's got Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and Tristan Thompson. and they are the defending champions. For him to say all the time, we don't have enough, I'm like, well, you're already a champ. You got, like, you think I don't want to play with Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving and Tristan Thompson in my heyday?
I mean, I cannot underscore what he is saying here enough. I mean, he's so right. Look, I've said over the course of the last 2 years on this show, as we watch two straight finals between the Cavaliers and the Warriors, and we've seen four regular season matchups between the Cavaliers and the Warriors, and of course all the games in between. And I have said many times on this show, I will take Kyrie Irving over Steph Curry. I have said that. That I think this is not some mismatch where the two-time reigning MVP and last year unanimous MVP is some head and shoulders above Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, to me, is one of the two or three best point guards in the NBA, and I don't know the order between Westbrook, who's a different type of point guard than Curry, and Kyrie. Kyrie, and then Chris Paul, who's a very different type than all three of them. I don't know the order. He's one of the three or four best point guards in the NBA, and anybody would love to say, man, that's my running mate. What more do you need than him? I mean, he's going to the Hall of Fame. Let me say this now. Kyrie Irving, before his career is over, unless he suffers a catastrophic injury and it's cut short, is going to the Hall of Fame. He's that good, averaging a career-high 25 points. He has just stepped his game up every year he's been in this league and as he stayed healthy. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Kevin Love, I don't know if he's going to the Hall of Fame when his career is over, but Kevin Love is an all-star. He is a true double-double machine. He stretches defenses with his outside stroke, and it should make things easier for LeBron James to do inside, and it does. That's why they're the defending champions. And I've already extolled the virtues of Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith. What's different from last year's championship team to this year's team? Matthew Dellavedova and Tim Mozgov. As Barkley said, what are you crying about? You're the defending champions. Are you saying that the real MVP of the league was Matthew Dellavedova, and without him you can't win a title? Really? That's what you're saying? Because that's the only thing missing. That's the only thing missing, and to complain about it is, as Barkley said, to whine.
I think, Charles, too, the one thing that he probably found, to me, from afar, looked like he took exception to, was that he didn't want to compete. But I was watching it because I wanted to see it again, and it's just fresh again for me. The first two times you questioned it. Is it not that he doesn't want to compete? Which has been said in every barbershop, every place, and everywhere. And it happened to Kevin Durant.
Bingo.
When he went to Golden State, people said, what, does Kevin Durant not want to compete? He's going to the Golden State Warriors?
Isn't that what I said? Isn't that what so many other people wrote? Kevin Durant, you just lost a 3-1 series lead to the Golden State Warriors? And rather than saying, we're going to get him next time, Russ, come on. Russ, Steven, let's rededicate ourselves. We're going to get him next time. We came this close. Damn it, that ain't getting away again. Instead, he said, I'm going to go join him. It looks like a guy who doesn't want to compete. We said it about
said
Kevin
it exactly
Durant as well.
Like that, but we sure spent about a good week on that one.
And ever since then, I'll be honest with you, I still have a lot less respect for Kevin Durant for that. It is fair to say the same thing about LeBron James. A, when he went to Miami, and B, now that he's back in Cleveland, and he's over there screaming about, you need to bring me more, bring me more, bring me more. Which leads Charles Barkley to say, don't you want to go after it with the guys that you've got? You already have an incredibly talented supporting cast. Why are you asking for the Eastern Conference All-Star team? Which is what he's asking for. It's a fair point. Durant's going through it. LeBron is acting singled out. Why? Thin skin, that's why.
So he doesn't want to. So it's not something that people aren't saying or isn't thinking about. So that's why I took exception. I thought it was a little bit too far where LeBron had gone. Because when you say you need help and you are the champs, people say that. They will think that. And because it came out from the back of his brain to the front of his mouth, doesn't make it wrong. That's what I thought. And I took exception to maybe him being personal.
No.
Yeah, so there's the Jets saying, you know what, Charles, what you said is not anything that anybody else isn't saying and thinking about. And he, meaning LeBron, did get too personal by coming back and not even addressing the issues of whininess or basketball talent or surroundings, roster, front office, and all the stuff that you brought up. He brought up stuff from your past off of the court and in bars and in stupid situations. I'm telling you, game, set, and match to Charles Barkley. my Cavalier fan friends, and everybody knows me, knows that I'm a Cavaliers fan. I root for them. I root for them against the Pistons. I root for them against the Celtics. I root for them against the Raptors, and I will root for them against the Warriors again and again and again and again and again. But I'm also going to be honest every single time. And the Cavaliers superstar is being thin-skinned in this situation. He is being a whiner. He is not being a leader. He is criticizing his teammates, and he is being far, 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 going far too out of bounds by taking the messenger down instead of addressing the message. And that's what he did with Barkley. Had to get all of this in. We'll talk more about it later, but we also are going to talk Super Bowl, as it is the Friday before Super Bowl. So what is this, the Super Bowl Eve? I guess what we can call this. Super Bowl Sunday is coming. Will the Patriots win number 5? Will the Falcons win number 1? Adam Stites, SB Nation NFL writer, joins us next to discuss right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, I don't know what's going on, but it is 3:42, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. We're endeavoring to get our guest to the program. Not exactly sure what's going on. So we're going to stay with the conversation that I started in the last half hour, because to me, it's much more interesting. Anyway, we are going to talk about the Super Bowl. I do have a great interest in it, so I'm only teasing in that regard. But I do want to get into this a little bit. Now, we're talking about LeBron James and the Charles Barkley fight. First of all, if you have a thought, this is a great time to use it and make it and express it. 866-240-1065. Now that we have a problem here with getting our guests. So, dial that phone number now. We'll get you on the radio. Are you in agreement with LeBron James, or are you in agreement with Charles Barkley, or can they both be right? Because to me, they were both right. I said this Tuesday, maybe, I think it was. They're both right in one regard. Charles Barkley, off the court throughout his life, you know, especially in his younger years, has been a bore. He has been a bully. He has been a, you know, kind of a bad dude. He's done some bad things. As he pointed out, he has to live with. But Charles Barkley is right, because LeBron James has been whiny. He has been cryy. He has been complainy. He has been less than a leader when he rips all of his teammates. So can't they both be right? And if the answer is no, only one guy can be right, then put me down firmly in the court of Team Charles, because Team Charles is accurate in this. Oh, hold on a second here. We're having a bit of an issue with the audio real quick. 3, 2, 1, here we go.
Like I say, I didn't get mad. I went and played golf. But I thought it was funny watching all these idiots on television talking about me and LeBron for the last 48 hours. But like I say, I'm never, no matter what any NBA players says about me, I stick 100% to basketball in my criticism of any NBA player. I'm never going to say anything personal. That's not our job. Our job is to give our honest opinion. And like, sometimes people get mad, and that's okay.
I love and agree with and subscribe to that part of being in sports media. I have to agree with that. And I try to keep it all professional, too, and not personal. Unless, of course, it's somebody's personal behavior that is affecting the sport or the team. Do you understand what I mean? Like when I was ripping Antonio Brown for his personal shortcomings of, you know, being stupid and doing this Facebook Live thing after the AFC divisional game, that affects the team. Odell Beckham doing stupid things off the field that affect his team. I'm going to criticize him because of the effect on the team, but not personal stuff where Charles Barkley pushed somebody through a window and all this other nonsense. That's, you know, and of course that's 25 years ago, which is another reason why it doesn't make sense to be personal. But it's also not sensible to be personal when the fact is you are ignoring, you are deflecting away from, changing the subject, building a straw man away from the actual criticism that was levied against you, which was basketball. Kenny Smith, again on the set of TNT last night, made a very interesting comparison to the automotive and traveling world.
Like I said, the guy who's riding around, I said this last week, in a Ferrari, a Bentley, and in private jets, and then says, man, you know what? I wish I had an everyday car. I can't understand your perspective, because So the majority of people, because we can't understand your perspective, doesn't make you right or him wrong. That was my point. Because the perspective is, you've got a lot, my man.
Okay.
So you can't really complain about not having an everyday car
or a
playmaker because you got a lot. So I
understand the perspective that both of them.
It's a great analogy by Kenny Smith. Tremendous analogy. He's such a bright dude. It's a brilliant dude, not a bright dude. Such a great point. He's got a Porsche in Kyrie Irving. He's got a Ferrari in Kevin Love. and he's got a private jet in the form of J.R. Smith. He's got all of these things, and he's complaining he doesn't have his everyday car. Matthew Dellavedova? That's really it. That's what we're saying. Come on, man. You got to run with the big guns that you've got and go get it and go get after it. Barkley was also asked if he had any animosity, if he's mad at LeBron over this, if he'll shake his hand.
I have no animosity toward LeBron. You know, Ernie, everything I've ever said about LeBron has been positive in all his guys. One of the 10 greatest players ever, amazing guy. His handle from 18 years old to where he is today, amazing. But we can criticize guys. Our job is not to get on TV and say 100% positive stuff about guys if we think they're wrong. That's not our job.
That's exactly correct. You should be allowed to criticize guys. You should be allowed to. But they are so thin-skinned in today's NBA, especially if you are one of the elite stars, like LeBron James is, that you're demonized for being with an honest basketball critique. Mark is in Toledo. Mark, thanks for joining us on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, Team LeBron or Team Charles? Where are you?
Definitely Team Charles. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. The thing with it is what Barkley said. Didn't LeBron's answer confirm everything that Barkley said? Because what he said is that basically he's whining and crying about having too much. Well, LeBron never responded to what Barkley said. All he did was attack his personal life in whining and crying, meaning he doesn't have an answer to what Barkley said. Because you won the championship with the exact same team, minus two players who, honestly, you don't need to win again. So
you're exactly right. That is exactly right. When Charles made the criticism in LeBron's response starts out with, he's not going to destroy my legacy.
Exactly.
It sounds like, okay, here it comes. Let's hear you defend your legacy. Let's hear your defense of your basketball talents, your perspective about the roster that you have and what you need, et cetera, et cetera. Laid out, LeBron. And instead, he doesn't talk basketball
at all.
He just goes to the Wikipedia page of Charles Barkley and starts reading all of his basketball.
Exactly. He never one time said anything basketball. And are you mad because somebody attacked you? Because if you want to be honest, Barkley just said what everybody else is saying. You just don't hear everybody else saying it because we're the common guy.
And that's what Kenny Smith said. Kenny Smith said, you know, everybody is thinking it because everybody's saying it about Durant, too.
Everybody's saying it. I mean, and if you want to be honest, it doesn't make any sense. What do you still have the best record in the East. You're still going to go to the Eastern Conference to the championship. What are you really complaining about? I just don't understand it.
I don't either.
You won the championship with this team. So how can you say you need more, you need more, you need more? It's basically, what Barkley was saying, this is what I took it, and I think people said at the beginning of the year, too, he just wants to play basketball with his buddies now. It's just to that point. And let's go get the Dwayne Wade and the Carmelo. So it's not about one more.
But you know what the worst part about it is? The worst part about it is you're right about the buddies, and it's not even the superstars either. He made sure that Griffin kept James Jones on the roster. Why? Because
exactly.
They're good friends. And they were good friends in Miami.
Yeah,
and he wants his buddies around. But then he's complaining that there's not enough money left and roster spots left to add better players than James Jones. So he wants, you know, I hate the stupid phrase, he wants his cake and eat it too, but he does. He wants his boys around. He wants his boys being paid. And the Cavaliers went ahead and paid them. But then he's complaining that he didn't get enough better players around.
Exactly. Which you help assemble the roster, so don't complain about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, thanks for the call, Mark. I mean, I'm trying to picture Magic, you know, just to pick somebody. I'm trying to picture Magic Johnson. He's surrounded by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy and Byron Scott. And if for some reason, Mitch Kupchak isn't back, and he's gone as a free agent. Can you hear Magic now telling the LA media, man, I hope the organization's not satisfied. Man, I hope they're not satisfied. I mean, you know, me and Worthy and Kareem and Byron, we got to do it all. You know, we need more help. We need more guys. We need better players. It's not good enough. I can't picture that. It would be like Larry Bird. Can you picture Larry Bird sitting in his locker? And the media gather around him after a loss. He's got Kevin McHale. Hall of Famer. He's got Robert Parrish, Hall of Famer. He's got Bill Walton, Hall of Famer. He's got Dennis Johnson, NBA All-Defensive Team for like a decade. He's got Danny Ainge as the scrappy little shooter. But Jerry Seasting leaves. Man, I don't know what we're going to do without another playmaker. We need our playmaker. We need somebody else to come back and play. I mean, what does he expect us to do without him? Because that is exactly what this is about Dellavedova. We need a backup point guard. Dellavedova's gone. Wait, what? You got your Kyrie, you got your JR, you got your Kevin Love, you got your Tristan Thompson, you got Kyle Korver. I mean, honestly, what? You got a defensive lockdown guy in Shumpert? You got Richard Jefferson, the quintessential pro's pro, who can come in off that bench and give you instant offense or great defense? What? Mozgov's not here, so it's not good enough? You know what I mean? It's just, it defies common sense. Dellavedova's not here, so it's not good enough? I can't picture the other stars doing that. I'm sorry. I just can't. And as Barkley said, what do you think Carmelo would do? If somebody said, hey, Carmelo, would you be okay? Do you think you could make a run at the title if we brought Kyrie Irving to be your point guard, Kevin Love to be your power forward on the other side, J.R. Smith to be a shooter, Tristan Thompson to take care of all the dirty work inside? You think you could try to win with that? Carmelo, they'd be burying Carmelo the next day because he'd have a heart attack. He'd have a heart attack. And so, my God, you're going to bring all that around me? Thank God in heaven. I thought I'd never have a chance to win a championship. Now I got a chance to win a championship. But LeBron is, man, we ain't good enough to win a championship with this group. That's not enough. We need more. Barkley is right. Not a little bit right. 100% right. All the way right.
There's a difference between criticism and personal. I guarantee you LeBron wasn't mad at the whiny or the...
This is Shaq, by the way, in case you can't figure out the voice.
Inappropriate. When you said that man doesn't want to compete, that's what ticked him off. And I would have did the same thing. I would have came right back at your rack. I would have came up here and punched you in your face. That's what I would have did.
Well, first of all, you're not a good fighter. listen, our job... We got a job to do. Our job is to give our opinion.
Okay,
it's not
you
always
went personal. He went personal. No, sober now. So
wait a minute. Listen. First of all,
he did not. Shaq is wrong. To say that somebody is whiny and not willing to go to battle with the team he's got and crying to the media that he needs more—that is a guy who's saying I can't compete as constructed. That's not personal. That is basketball related.
Well, we just disagree on the personal. I look at this big picture. I'll take my chances. If we lose to the Golden State Warriors or the Spurs, and I got Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving and Tristan Thompson, I'm good. But like I say, if I'm Carmelo Anthony or Russell Westbrook, I can complain and say I don't have enough help. But if I got two other All-Stars and I'm the greatest player in the world, I don't think it's too much to say, like, I take my chances.
So in your mind, are we done? Is this done?
It's done.
It should be done. It should be done, and it's a TKO. Technical knockout, Barkley over James. Troy in Bowling Green, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How you doing, Troy?
How you doing this afternoon?
I'm outstanding. Who are you on? You on Team Barkley or are you on Team James?
I'm jumping on Barkley.
All right. Tell us why.
I mean, it is just, from the aspect of you won your championship, what's wrong with being the underdog? Go out there and fight a little bit. And we all know Golden State's got everybody. So go out there and beat them, and you put that feather in your cap. So what if you sign Melo or someone else? That takes more credibility away from you as the number one player in the world by adding more superstars or more pieces because you could win with who you already have.
I agree. It really does. And it doesn't even have to be a Melo. I mean, that's the weird part about it. It's not like he's saying, I need another superstar to win. He's saying, I just need a backup point guard. In other words, every piece needs to be in place for him to win or else. And this is what my personal belief is. I think if this is 5 years ago, he's probably not making the same exact statements. And I know 5 years ago he's in Miami and winning a championship. But in the same circumstance, he would be not making the same statements. And the reason why is 5 years ago he was 27. Now he's 32. He knows that this is right around the age that Larry Bird's career ended because of his back. He knows that this is the age that Kobe Bryant won his last title. And he had many great years after that, but couldn't win titles anymore. He knows that his window of catching Michael Jordan is closing. And if he doesn't win one at 32 and 33 and 34 to match Michael 6, the odds are very, very good. He isn't winning one at 35 and 36 and 37. So I think he just kind of sees it all kind of slipping away in terms of his chances to catch the ghost. He said he's chasing a ghost to be the greatest of all time. And I think he sees that window closing, and if every piece isn't just right, and he sees how good the Warriors are across the country on the other coast, it's just it's eating at him, and he's kind of acknowledging, I can't beat those guys. And you know what? That's admitting what Charles Barkley said. You don't even want to go compete. You don't even want to go get after it.
Well, and Michael, he made John Paxson what he is, Steve Kerr what he is. You know, those are the pieces. It's his job to make those smaller pieces of the puzzle fit.
And by and large, he does. You know, I mean, I'll give LeBron James all the credit in the world. He makes players around him better. There's no doubt. Like, Matthew Dellavedova is not going to be as good of a player in Milwaukee as he was in Cleveland, in large part because of the effect of LeBron James. The great passing, the commanding of double teams constantly, the ability to find Matthew Dellavedova, all those sorts of things. You know, and I'm just picking Deli because that's what we're the only piece that they're missing, really. But he does make people better around him. You're exactly right. Michael did it, and he does it. But he's just mad that he doesn't think, you know, he's got enough to match what the Warriors put together when they picked up KD. I think that's really, at the end of the day, what has got him so bitter is that the Warriors, whom they just beat, added KD, and they didn't have a complementary matching move to counter-effect that. And there is no way to counteract that, quite honestly.
Yeah, I got to make one last point.
Sure,
what he sounds like to me is that guy at the golf course that comes about every 6 weeks with a new driver because he can't hit it anymore and things are going to fall apart. So I'm going to go out and buy a new driver, and he's in love with that for about a week and a half, and then things go south again, and, well, got to go out and try something new.
What a great analogy that is. That is very well done. And by the way, since you brought it up, when's Tiger Woods going to go out and buy a new driver?
I think that little wedge that he hit in the water the other day made his back cramp up more than anything.
For those who don't know, he withdrew in Dubai. He is done after a 77 opening round yesterday, complaining once again of back spasms, and is going to go back on the indefinite hiatus that he has been on. So it just may be done for Tiger Woods. Anyway, thanks, Troy, for the call. I appreciate it. God bless. All right, we're going to get a timeout here at the top of the hour, but I that's a great analogy. Only the poor archer blames his arrows when he misses his target. You know, at the end of the day, man, if it's the arrow's fault, that arrow is a little bit bent, then you just don't believe in yourself very much as the archer. If he's complaining that Matthew Dellavedova is going to wreck his postseason plans, then he doesn't believe in himself very much. He doesn't believe in his own ability, and that's what Charles Barkley is saying. You're the greatest player in the world. Barkley declared it. By far, I think he said. Greatest player in the world by far. And you have two all-stars running alongside and a very solid B-plus player down low, along with a couple of sharpshooters, Smith and Korver, when Smith comes off the injured list. I mean, what more do you need? If you can't win with that, you know what? It's you. It's the archer. It is not your arrows that are crooked. I know that's a goofy analogy. The driver one he made was a great one, too. The golfer comes out with a new driver every 6 weeks because it's just not working. You know, I just can't do it. Boy, this new driver will take care of it. You know what? It's the same stroke. It's the same backswing. It's the same head lift. It's the same heel you lift. It's the same pickup. You know, whatever it is that you're doing wrong, it's not going to be fixed by that driver. It's a great analogy by Troy there. All right, here's what we got. We got a timeout coming. We got a sports center coming. On the other side, we're going to shift gears, but with a caveat. We're going to shift gears to the NFL because Super Bowl 51 is about 48 hours. Actually, hold on. Let me do this here. 50 hours, right, Jim? It starts about 6:20, I think. 6:20 is, I think, the kickoff time. It usually is on Super Bowl Sundays. So that would be about 50 hours and 20 minutes from right now. How about
that's
that?
About right.
Look at that. I did the math. I'm good. Anywho, so we're going to talk Super Bowl and get a breakdown of the Patriots and the Falcons from Scott Petrak. But since Petrak will come to us from the city to the east, Cleveland, we're going to ask him about the LeBron James story, too, a little bit, and the Charles Barkley feud, if you want to call it that. And, of course, we want more of your fantastic phone calls at 866-240-1065 right here on this free-for-all Friday edition of The Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
us all season or just for a few weeks, you know what today is. This is a day we dedicate to the football. It's going to be a huge factor in this game for sure. These are two really good teams that have high regard for the ball on offense and know how to go after it on defense. Both teams had 11 turnovers during the season, which happened to be the fewest in the NFL. So they're going to be tough to come by. When you go through a difficult loss or a challenging time, you do gain some resiliency. You do gain some toughness. When we lost to Kansas City at home, it was one of those moments where, you know, I was anxious to see how we'd respond. Where I felt that shift was the unconditional support for one another. When you get to that spot where I'm just going to go battle for the guy right next to me, it got a little stronger. And then as the end of the regular season happened, we really challenged the team to find, is there a part of your game you can improve upon during that bye? And that's where another shift happened in the postseason.
The addition of some players on our team, guys like Alex Mack coming into our offensive line, and Taylor Gabriel, Muhammad Sanu, Aldrick Robinson at the wide receiver position. You talk about two young tight ends for us, Josh Perkins and Austin Hooper. When you put a lot of talent around you, it makes it, you know, easier to make plays, and you know, our supporting cast has done a great job this year.
We have a good team. We have a lot of good players. Unfortunately, Rob hasn't been with us here for a few weeks. If he was, nobody would be working harder than Rob. But we're a team, and we have a lot of good players. And whichever players are called on to step up and give their best, that's what they've done. We'll do that on Sunday, too. And look, you've seen us defensively, you know, transform from a 3-4 to a 4-3 to a nickel team, from a zone team to a man team, a cover two team to a cover one team, you know, so forth through the years. So it's not so much about what particular player you're looking for, I think, as the process of sorting through and selecting and bringing them into your program and building and indoctrinating the program or orienting the player into your program to get the most production out of them.
With only 70 plays left in the season, you know, you got to make sure everything that's there is of critical importance. You know, you don't often have the luxury of all this extra time. You know, I think we've used it wisely. You know, it's a big challenge. They got a good scheme and they got good players, so nothing's going to be easy. You know, ultimately, we have to be prepared to win a game. We know the challenge that's ahead of us, and it only it's going to get more hectic as we get closer to the game.
I really like the way their back end has improved. They were very young early in the season, and they started to mature as the year went on. But Vic Beasley and Dwight Freeney, they have to do a great job of being able to create pressure without blitzing Tom Brady. That's going to be the key to success because, you know, when you bring pressure, especially 5- and 6-man pressures, you know, Tom historically has picked you apart. If there's something that you're doing that's having success, you're going to see immediately change on the sideline. They do a great job of adjusting throughout the course of the game, dealing with different personnel packages that Atlanta's going to be throwing at them. You give Coach Belichick and his staff 2 weeks to prepare for somebody, you know, you have to think that they'll be ready to go.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, I tell you what, pretty doggone hard to argue with Larry Fitzgerald there at the end of that montage. You give Bill Belichick a couple of weeks, it's very, very hard to pick against him. Welcome as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Back into this half hour a little bit late, so let's get right to our guest, our good friend Scott Petrak, the first guy we turn to when we want to talk NFL right here on The Ticket. Scott is, of course, a longtime NFL beat writer covering the Cleveland Browns to the east of us in Cleveland. And, Scott, thanks for the time. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. I'm real good. I'm looking forward to a much better Super Bowl than I think we got in terms of championship weekend, the conference championship Sunday. It's hard to believe that it was, you know, 2 full weeks ago. And in fact, it's hard to remember how easy it was for both of these two teams to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm hoping we get a good one. I think we will, but we need it because you're right. The playoffs have been a letdown.
With the exception of that Green Bay-Dallas game, which was a classic, and I mean an epic game. I mean, really, the playoffs have been more than a letdown. I think it's been kind of symbolic of the entire season. It's just been, we've talked about the ratings going down. We've talked about the lack of compelling Thursday night matchups, so much so that they're talking about maybe not doing Thursday night football, all these sorts of things. It's been kind of a down year, and the playoffs really, you know, underscored all of that. If we have a crappy Super Bowl, man, the league is going to have some serious introspective soul-searching to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's cyclical, but I would agree that this would be, you know, if the Super Bowl turned out to be a blowout, it would just be a cap or two. What has been a down year for the NFL pretty much all around.
Scotty, I talked to you 2 years ago the last time the Patriots were in the Super Bowl, and I said to you then that for the first time in, well, really ever, but, you know, in the, I guess it was a non-factor when Tony Easton and the boys took on the Bears in the 85 Super Bowl. It wasn't really the same thing. In the Belichick-Brady era, I've never rooted for the Patriots in the Super Bowl until 2 years ago because I couldn't stand Pete Carroll and some of the antics of the Seahawks and some of their fans. As the 2 years since then have gone by, I find myself softening a little bit only because if there are two villains in a certain scenario, I'm going to pick the lesser of the two villains, and I've become so contemptible. Well, that's the wrong way to say that. I find Roger Goodell so contemptible that what he did, in my opinion, to the Patriots, to the organization, to Tom Brady personally, with four-game suspension this year, his mishandling of so many other disciplinary cases that were so much less important, that were far worse and so much more important than this stupid Deflategate thing, I hate Goodell so doggone much, I'm almost starting to say, I hope the Patriots win one just to stick it in his ear.
Well, I think your opinion is shared. I know your opinion is shared in New England. I'm not sure the hate for Goodell trumps the hate for Belichick and Brady across the country. And me personally, I agree with a lot of your points on Goodell, but he doesn't factor in to when I'm watching this game, who I think is going to win or who I want to win.
Right.
Just because, I think I separate the Brady-Belichick factor from Goodell, but I see where you're coming from, and there's a whole lot of people in Boston who agree with you.
Yeah, well, you're certainly right nationwide. I think I saw a survey that said 72% maybe. Did you see that? 72% of those across the country without partisan rooting interest because they're not from Atlanta or New England do not want New England to win.
That sounds right, and it's a little bit of the Yankee, the Yankees in Major League Baseball. They just won for so long. And Belichick is a guy that's unlikable. There's no personality there that he lets the world see. And I think Brady's just, he's goody-two-shoes and he's got the perfect life. I don't think you root against Brady. I think you root against Belichick, and Brady just kind of gets enveloped in it.
I brought this up yesterday because I saw a couple of television interviews yesterday before we went on the air, Scott. One with Hines Ward and one with Dwight Freeney, the former sack specialist for the Colts. And both of them were asked about Brady, and it was just so weird. They were separate interviews, so it wasn't like they were together and nodding in accordance and agreement with one another. They were separate interviews, and both of them said, man, in Ward's case, he said, I used to hate Tom Brady. He said, but I can't hate anymore. He said, he is just so good. He has been so good for so long. He continues to do it to team after team, not just to my team, but to every team. And he's never, ever anything but classy about it. He said, I can't hate him, Hines Ward did. He said, he's phenomenal. And then Dwight Freeney said, I've tried to hate him. And not that I did, but I tried to, and I can't, because every time I see him, he is personable, he is classy, he is not cocky or pompous, he doesn't, whereas, and in my view, Scott, he should be. He's got a reason to be arrogant with the supermodel wife and the supermodel life that he lives and his four championships and on, and his good looks and all the rest. He has a right to be just the biggest DB ever. And he isn't. And that to me, it's kind of rubbing off a little bit, I think, on a lot of people that you're right. They separate him out from Belichick, and nobody wishes Tom Brady anything but good things.
Yeah, and I think publicly he really cares about his image, and he tries to say all the right things. If you hear him on, he does a Monday night radio show before the Monday Night Football, and he's, real careful about what he says. But then when you talk to people who know him off the field and went to college with him and played with him and against him, they love him, and he's a guy's guy, and he works hard in the locker room, and all those things that you want out of your quarterback and you would expect to hear from possibly the greatest of all time. But it's good to hear that he's not necessarily a phony.
Yeah, that's very well said. He's not a phony. He's genuine. The stuff you see from him isn't just for the cameras. It's it's legit, and I think that is important. And I think it also was a little bit telling on Media Day when he was asked by the little kid about his hero, and he kind of choked up about his dad a little bit there. That really, really, I think, opened a lot of people's eyes on. I made a weird comparison yesterday, and I wanted to get your opinion on it. I didn't really truly appreciate Larry Bird in his prime until after his prime ended, and really until I kind of became a grown man and not watching him through a kid's eyes in the 80s or a teenager's eyes. And I was kind of Team Magic. I liked Showtime better than I liked the Celtics. And so I deliberately didn't really appreciate Bird, I think, until I was older. I'm doing the same thing with Brady. I don't know what it is about Boston area legends, but when he was battling tooth and nail with Peyton for all these years, I was a Peyton fan, and so I didn't like Brady. And now that he's kind of, well, he should be in his twilight, but the way he's playing at the age of 30, not, apparently not. He's going to do this for another 5 years, it looks like. But now that he's, you know, older and Manning is gone and so on, I'm looking back and trying to really truly appreciate the greatness that he has put on display for the last almost 20 years. Do you think he is, win or lose on Sunday, the greatest quarterback of all time?
Well, first, I can see that comparison, and I do think for a long time, Tom got overshadowed because he followed Peyton Manning and because Brett Favre was around and in his prime, and there were other guys that were maybe flashier and certainly better athletes. So it took a lot of wins for Tom to kind of carve out his rightful place in the league and in the league's history. And, you know, Bob, I think I would. I think I'd say he's the greatest ever. You know, it's a fuzzy argument because there isn't, you know, it's not quantifiable. But the fact that he just wins like he does, and he's stayed healthy, and he's been so good for so long, and he throws a great ball, and he stands tall in the pocket. Not the best athlete, but he does a lot of things extremely well. And I think that got overlooked a long time when people were thinking, oh, it's Belichick winning these Super Bowls. Brady's got a lot to do, has a lot to do with it, obviously. And it's not just a product of a system. He makes throws, he makes big throws at big times, and I do. I think he's the greatest of all time, win or lose.
Yeah, I think and you're right, it's hard to quantify, because when you look at the other guy that is, you know, he's compared with, which is Montana, they both have their four, but Montana did his in four tries. He has never failed on the big stage. Brady already has two fails on the big stage, and that's not fair, because obviously it took one of the greatest throws in Super Bowl history to Mario Manningham, and then one of the great catches in Super Bowl history with David Tyree to beat Brady in those two Super Bowls. But if he loses to Matt Ryan, does that take some luster off of the four shiny rings he can hold up against Montana's four shiny rings and Bradshaw's four shiny rings? Does it take some luster off it that there are three shiny rings somebody else is wearing that Brady failed to capture?
To me, it doesn't. I think he should get credit for going to seven Super Bowls. I don't take away from John Elway losing those early Super Bowls. He got the Broncos there when they weren't the best team. It's not his fault they lost. You know, if Brady goes out and throws four picks Sunday, then it's not a good game, and I don't know if that affects his legacy, but you can say, okay, on the biggest stage, he had a bad game, and he's directly responsible for the loss. I didn't put him directly responsible for either of those Giants losses.
No, neither am I.
I thought
neither
he played well in one and played average in the other against a really good defense who was getting a lot of pressure on him. So to me, the seven supersedes the three losses. And Montana had chances to go to seven Super Bowls, and he didn't. He lost the teams that went to the Super Bowl. He lost the Giants teams in the NFC Championship game. So that should be just as big a mark against a quarterback as losing in a Super Bowl.
That's a great point. That's a great answer to it, and I'm glad to hear it, because I'm kind of, like I said, in my older years, I'm looking back now, and I'm trying to appreciate greatness for what it is without my bias or dislike for the Patriots, dislike for Belichick to be a factor in all of this. And I'm leaning toward, you know, Tom Brady as the greatest. Certainly, I think if he wins his fifth and breaks that, you know, that tie on Sunday, I don't think there's even any room for the argument anymore. But win or lose, I'm kind of coming around, and that's a great point that you just made. Montana couldn't.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting, Bob. Sorry to interrupt. It's, you know, Terry Bradshaw won four, but he's not in that conversation. So it's more than just winning four Super Bowls, you know?
Yes.
To me, John Elway's a better quarterback than Terry Bradshaw. And John Elway is, you know, personally, I would rather have John Elway as my quarterback than Joe Montana. So you can't just base it on that. But when I think you take all of Tom Brady and four or five Super Bowls and two or three losses in the Super Bowl, that makes him probably the greatest ever.
I completely agree, and I'm not trying to suggest that it's only about who gets the fifth ring that breaks the tie that is the best because of that. I just mean that it is a thing. It is a factor that some people look at. Not,
sure.
And again, the Bradshaw thing is not a factor here, because Dan Marino was a better quarterback than Terry Bradshaw, and he has
right.
Zero rings. So, you know, you mentioned Elway, who's got two. Marino is better. Manning, who's only got two. I think Manning was better. Bradshaw was a tremendous leader and a tremendous player for the right team at the right time. It was he did great things in the Super Bowl, made the huge throw, but he's not on the same level historically as these guys. I'm with you.
No.
I just feel like Brady could just kind of cement it if you didn't look at all of the things that you point out and that I've pointed out. If you are just counting rings, you know, he's going to break that tie for those who look at that sort of thing.
Sure, and I would even say it's a different question, greatest all time, or you had to pick one guy, right? If I'm going to start a franchise – he would be in the discussion, but I don't know if that's a no-brainer. But that doesn't mean he's not the greatest of all time.
Well, now you're really doing something here, which is a fascinating thing. When you say if you're picking one guy, a minute ago I thought you meant if I'm picking one guy to win a Super Bowl for me. One game, I get to pick my starting quarterback. But now you said if I'm starting my franchise with. So let's do that. And which way do we really decide who the greatest quarterback ever is? Is it the guy that I'm starting my franchise with right now? Do I go Elway? Do I go, you know, Marino? Do I go Brady or Montana? Or are you talking about I've got one game to win? It is the Super Bowl. Let's say the league is disbanding and it's the last Super Bowl ever. Do whatever you want to do to make it the biggest game in history. Who do you want under center for that game? And is it the same guy that you want to start your franchise with?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting debate. That would probably be Tom Brady because he's played so well in big games. I think Montana would be in that discussion. But if I'm picking one guy to start a franchise, to me, John Elway brought so much to that position. He was a winner, biggest arm maybe ever to play, or one of the biggest arms ever to play. Could run, kind of a dual threat before there were dual threats. I know he killed the Cleveland teams that I grew up rooting for as a teenager, but he just, to me, has always been that guy. If I were picking a guy, I just thought he was a complete package, and he's a way better athlete than Tom Brady, so I think it would come down to Brady or Elway.
That's a really fascinating discussion. I think we're going to open up that up to calls when you and I are done at 866-240-1065. Pick a guy to start your all-time franchise with, and then pick a guy to win the one biggest game in the history of the sport with, your Super Bowl of all Super Bowls with. See if they're the same guy. Scott Petrak says they're not. Elway to start the franchise, Brady to win the one game. Really, really fascinating discussion. All right, let's talk about this one game, Super Bowl 51. We haven't even mentioned the Falcons yet, and that's not fair. Matt Ryan could very well be the MVP. In fact, I think will be, considering the AP voters who decide who the first team All-Pro quarterback is, said Matt Ryan, and they're the same voters who decide who the MVP is. And I feel like they're going to say Matt Ryan. What kind of pressure is on him in this game, and how much tougher will it be in your mind, Scott, for him, considering he has never seen these bright lights before? Tom Brady has seen them six times before. If anybody is at a disadvantage from that standpoint, it is Matt Ryan. How much is that to overcome?
Well, it's a factor, and I think it'd be silly to think it's not. It's up to Matt whether or not it becomes the deciding factor. I heard Troy Aikman talking today, and he said he was surprisingly calm before his first Super Bowl. He was shocked at how calm he was. So maybe that happens to Matt Ryan. I think what he and the Falcons would be worried about is New England getting off to a fast start. If New England's up 14-0, you know, Atlanta hasn't been down a lot this year because they're scoring every time they have the ball, and they've scored on their first possession a ton of time. So you'd have to watch how they handle that adversity if it happened early. But I think Matt Ryan's going to be fine. He's been in the league for a long time. I love his coordinator. I love his weapon. He's got a lot going for him. The key is don't have one of those big mistakes early, you know, a blindside strip sack or a stupid interception, because then that's when the doubts can creep in, because as good as they are and as long as they've been doing this, they're humans, and it's a giant stage, and you're right, he's never been there.
You know, Bill Belichick is so well known for taking his opponent's best offensive weapon away from them and then daring somebody else to beat them. It was weird in the AFC Championship game this time around, because it's hard to say which is the biggest weapon. Is it Le'Veon Bell or Antonio Brown, you know, for Ben Roethlisberger to use, because Bell got hurt, so he was a non-factor. And then he did, it looked like, really kind of take Brown for the most part out of the game and said, somebody else beat us. And the rest of the Steelers receivers and backs could not do that. I don't know if that's possible with the Falcons, because, I mean, certainly Julio Jones is the greatest weapon that they have, but between Freeman and Sanu, I mean, they just have so many guys who are great open field game breakers. Is it possible for Belichick to just say, I'm going to focus on Julio Jones and dare the other guys to beat us, which has been his MO?
Well, I don't think it is, and I think the biggest reason why it's not is Kyle Shanahan's offense. You know, Atlanta isn't we're going to drop back and we're going to run simple routes and I'm going to isolate Julio Jones. It's so complex. It's so much of it is based off play action, where the linebackers have to respect the run, and there's deception and there's rollouts, that I don't think it will be as easy for Belichick to do that. Plus, I think Julio Jones is a fantastic player that can't, even if you double cover him, I think he can still make catches. And I don't think Matt Ryan sees double coverage. He goes, oh, I'm not going to throw the ball there. I think he can still try to get the ball to Julio Jones. So I don't think you can just take him away. And I'm fascinated to see Kyle Shanahan versus Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator. That's a matchup I'm really looking forward to because I'm not sure how that's going to play out. I think Atlanta's going to be able to score points.
So, well, you may have just answered the question with, I don't know, but my question was going to be, then how do you handle it if you're Matt Patricia? What do you do? Do you say, I am going to bring the house and get at him early? Or do you say, we know what Tom Brady does against the blitz. No, I'm going to just, you know, trust my front four, and I'm going to try to mix up my coverages and drop seven guys all day long. Because the thing that Belichick does so well on the offensive side, obviously, and not just him, but obviously his offensive coordinator, McDaniels, is they find stars that weren't stars before. You know, maybe today right. It's Amendola. Maybe tomorrow it's, oh, for crying out loud, and I can't forget the kid who scored, torched the Steelers.
Hogan.
Yeah, Chris Hogan. The lacrosse player, for crying out loud. You know, he takes guys that maybe the other team isn't preparing to stop and says, okay, you're going to be our feature guy today, and they're never going to see it coming. So how do you, if you are Atlanta's defense, or excuse me, New England's defense, how do you handle come out against that Matt Ryan offense? Do you bring the house, or do you, and I know I'm mixing up, I'm going offense and defense,
sure.
And defense and offense, but let's start with the defense of Patricia first against that Atlanta offense. Do you bring the house, or do you have four guys, you know, just kind of trusting to be your pass rush?
I think you have to make Atlanta go 7, 8, 9 plays in a drive. I think if you start getting to, okay, we're going to match touchdowns with them and we're going to go up and down the field, which Atlanta is certainly capable of doing. Bill Belichick likes that kind of matchup. I think he's going to run the ball a lot on offense and try to pound the Atlanta defense, try to shorten the game, limit the Atlanta possessions, which means, okay, so when Atlanta gets the ball and maybe you win the field position battle, then you make him throw the ball 8 times and you make him check it down and you take away those big chunk plays that Kyle Shanahan likes and Matt Ryan likes. And maybe they get frustrated. Maybe somebody in the maybe a receiver fumbles. Maybe a back fumbles because you hit him really hard in space, and that's what Belichick likes to do in the Super Bowl, is be physical. So I think that's what they do. I don't think they'll blitz a lot of guys. I think they hope to get there with four. They hope to maybe, you know, Alex Mack, the center, who used to be in Cleveland, has a bum leg. He's going to fight through it, but if he's compromised at all, can they get pressure up the middle? And if they do, that's where this game could turn.
Okay, Scott Petrick is our guest, NFL beat writer covering the Cleveland Browns. Now let's flip the script because I kind of blended them together in my question, which is a mistake. But now let's flip the script. As I mentioned, Belichick, Brady, they know how to find different guys that the defense is not prepared to stop. How, if you are the Atlanta defense, how do you approach this with Brady? Do you, you know, have the same approach you just described on how they should attack Matt Ryan, or what do you think they need to do against a guy who has seen virtually everything in every Super Bowl?
Right. Well, it seems like any time a team has success against Tom Brady is they figure out a way to confuse him somewhat. You know, Eric Mangini had been around it for so long, and they did like a UFO thing where everybody stood up right before the snap, and then they kind of dispersed, so Tom couldn't diagnose the coverage ahead of time. Atlanta, I don't think it is that kind of team. They're a basic defense. You know, Dan Quinn's run kind of the same system in Seattle and now in Atlanta. So I think they have to rely on pressure from their front, and that means Garrett inside, it means Vic Beasley off the edge. And if they can't get it with four guys, like the Giants did in their 2 Super Bowl wins, then I think Atlanta's in big trouble because then they have no choice but to blitz. And then you put a young secondary, you know, you put a young secondary and ask them to play man-to-man against these receivers and against this scheme, and that's impossible to do. And that's just a credit to New England because I'm sure we talked about it during the season, Bob. When Rob Gronkowski went out for the season, I thought New England would make a run, but either they wouldn't get to the Super Bowl or they'd lose in the Super Bowl, and they've overcome everything, and that's a tribute to those guys on the roster and in the coaching staff.
Yeah, I didn't think they'd make it. I thought when Gronkowski went down, I thought they were done. You know, I thought it would be the Steelers or the Raiders at the time were rolling. Of course, Derek Carr was healthy. I thought it would be someone else, maybe even the Chiefs. But you're right, and you cannot bet against them. The one thing they've proven throughout all of this great dynastic run of theirs is they are not one guy unless that guy is Brady or Belichick.
Right.
They are not one guy. They have lost, you know, Randy Moss. I mean, you just go through the number of receivers, number of running backs, number of linemen that have changed, number of defensive stars that have changed. They are not one guy. They never have been. And it is truly, in a lot of teams and college football programs love to use the next man up philosophy. We're next man up. Well, in New England, they truly are. It doesn't matter who falls. There is another guy ready to step in and play at almost the exact same level to carry them. Okay, Scott, you've done X's and O's on offense and defense for both teams. We talked intangibly about the first time for Ryan. Let me just ask you that one final intangible question about the whole group. Again, the fact that Belichick has a routine that they have practiced six times now about how to best get ready for a Super Bowl. 2 weeks, how to prepare for the media mess, how to handle the preparation on site, on all the distractions, and then the nerves and the butterflies of game day. He's been through it. His club has been through it. Brady's been through it as an organization. Obviously, four times out of six, they were successful. Falcons have never been here. They've never, you know, with this organization, this group. Sure. They've never been here. So how much of an advantage is that, not just for the quarterback that I asked you before, but from a head coach's standpoint, from a, you know, a Quinn versus Belichick game day, week, game 2 week preparation standpoint? How much of an advantage is it for Belichick?
I don't think it makes a difference in the outcome, but it's an advantage for sure. And, you know, when you compare these two teams, you compare coaching staffs. I like Dan Quinn a lot. I love Kyle Shanahan. I still give the edge to Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniel and Matt Patricia. And part of his experience, part of it is because I think they're probably the smartest threesome coaching in the league. So there's no way that won't be a factor. And I guess to say that won't affect the outcome. It could affect the outcome. And I'm going to pick New England, so I factor that in. I don't think Atlanta will be overwhelmed, however. I like a lot of their guys. I like the biggest players on their team are veterans, especially on offense, and I think that experience will carry them. The coach has been to Super Bowls with Seattle, but you still have to give an obvious edge to New England.
All right. Well, you've kind of ventured into the final question, which is, of course, to make your pick. And tell me not only why you're picking New England, and you've kind of laid some of it out, but specifically what you think the score is going to be and how this plays out.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I've been grappling with this for 2 weeks. I think Atlanta is more talented. Not by a ton, but I think they're more talented. I don't think anybody, skill position-wise, take Tom Brady out of the equation. I don't think anybody on New England is as good as Julio Jones. I really don't. However, I just think this is Tom Brady's year. And, you know, it started with the Deflategate suspension, and his mom's sick, and they're on a roll, and all these things lumped into it. I just can't see him losing this game. I think it's going to be a good game. I think New England figures out a way to make one play on defense, and I think you're going to see a bunch of points because Atlanta's too good for New England to stop the entire game. But maybe in the red zone, they get a stop or two, force a field goal or two, and that's the difference. So I'm going New England 31, Atlanta 27. Something like that.
Wow. Yeah, and you know what? I'm impressed that you think that top-scoring defense in the National Football League, the Patriots, can hold them to under 30. I don't think they can. I think everything you said is fair, but I think it's going to be higher than that. I think if Brady's going to win, he's going to have to outscore them. More than that, I don't think you're keeping Matt Ryan and his group under 30. It would be an amazing accomplishment if they're able to do that. Although I am indeed leaning toward New England, I think it might be a little bit higher. Scott Petrak, tremendous conversation, great analysis as always. Before you go, since you are there in Cleveland, Ohio, I have to ask you, Team Barkley or Team LeBron?
Can I be Team Stay Out of It?
You can, but I would call you a wuss for it.
And I find the whole thing a little bit childish and, you know, the fact that we're waiting on every word for these guys to say. But, you know, LeBron's earned the right to be offended, I believe. And, you know, I don't know if he can say Barkley crossed the line. I know a lot of people think he did. You know, he's just stating an opinion. But, you know, LeBron feels like he put up with a lot of stuff over a lot of years and decided, you know, this is when he's going to draw the line. And, you know, I think he probably earned the right to do that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he has a right to do anything he wants to do, but do you think he did it right? You know what I mean? Is because Barkley said, dude, you got great players all around you, and you're the greatest player in the world. Go compete. And LeBron's answer wasn't about competing, and it wasn't about basketball. It was he once pushed a guy out a window. He once spit on somebody. He once did this. He once did that. It didn't address the basketball issue at hand. I just can't believe that LeBron thought this was his way to put Barkley on blast. He none of the things that he said about Barkley, you know, refuted Barkley's claims against him about, you know, about competing this year with the roster that he has. That's what I thought was weird.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying there. And, you know, LeBron can get defensive, and I think this was part of it. And he mentioned his legacy, and I think that's the overriding thing. He looks at Golden State and sees Kevin Durant and says, geez, how am I going to beat these guys? And that's always in the back of his head, and that comes out sometimes. And in his mind, the only way is to improve my roster. And I can see where Barkley would come from, but I think LeBron also has a point going, you know, look at matchup guys. We're at a disadvantage. I'm not sure I can carry these guys past an improved Golden State team.
Yeah, and you know, that to me is, I think, where Barkley came in with the word compete, you know? Because to me, you're right. I mean, Durant is a game changer, but what are you going to do? There is no equal and opposite reaction for the Cavs to do. There isn't a top three player in the world, former scoring champion, former MVP like Durant, that's available to match with. So to me, I'm like, look, okay, let's go man for man. LeBron, you outplay Kevin Durant for seven games. Kyrie can outplay Steph Curry. There's no doubt in my mind. To me, Kyrie Irving is one of the top three point guards in the league, and I don't even know the order. Sure. To me, Tristan Thompson and all of the little things that he does and the offensive rebounding is not dissimilar, with the exception of the three-point game of Draymond Green, from what he does. To me, Kevin Love is a huge advantage over the Warriors. And then to me, J.R. Smith, he's not quite, but when he's healthy, he's not quite as consistent as Klay Thompson, but we saw what he did in the finals. We saw how huge he was, and you added Kyle Korver, a near 50% career three-point shooter, to come in too. So to me, you know, what Barkley is saying is, bro, it's not like it's you and four bottles of warm spit. You've got superstars and great role players around you. Go compete with these guys and get after it.
Right, but when you're in the grind of January and Golden State's going out and killing everybody because they have all those stars, and you have J.R. Smith banged up and Kevin Love banged up, and you're playing more minutes than you want to play because you're trying to beat Dallas on January 21st, you know, I think that's where the frustration comes in. And the fine line about Barkley compete, I get where he was coming from, but I think as an athlete and as a competitor, you hear that and you say, did you not see me in the finals? Did you not see me chase down that block? Have you not seen me play game in and game out for my whole stinking career?
But there it is. Scott, he didn't say that. You did. That's the thing. If he'd have said that, I'd have been like, Team LeBron. There you go. There's the answer. You're talking to me about competing. Did you see this? All the
stuff
listing is what he should have listed. Instead, he goes to Wikipedia and looks up Charles Barkley controversies and lists them to Dave McNutt.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it was just the wrong way to handle it, because what you said would have been a much, much better defense for LeBron James. All right, so to wrap it up, you think the Warriors are going to beat the Patriots, right?
That's what I got.
Scotty, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, see
you, bud. You got it. There's Scott Petrak joining us from Cleveland. Let's get a quick time out here. I do want to get some phone calls from you, your predictions here at the end of this whole thing as well. I'll give you my final score prediction for the Super Bowl as well. We'll get Cushlin's as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Team. All right, final segment of the extravaganza on this Super Bowl Eve, as we are just roughly about 49 and a half hours away from the kickoff of Super Bowl 51 down in Houston, Texas, deep in Aharta, the great state of Texas. Will it be Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, who are already in their record seventh Super Bowl as a coach quarterback tandem, going for their fifth and achieving it? Or will it be the Atlanta Falcons getting off the Super Bowl schneid, if you will, and winning their first world championship of the Super Bowl era with Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, if you will, capping an MVP caliber and likely winning season with a Super Bowl championship? Jim Cushlin, all that's left now is the picks. So why don't you go ahead and start and break it down? Who are you picking?
Well, of course, before I do, let me remind everyone, if you're thinking of being one of those degenerates, don't take my word for it, because I'm probably wrong. Now that disclaimer is out of the way, I'm liking New England in this one. I think Brady, we were saying, how long this season were we talking about the Aaron Rodgers and all that he did, and that's why I couldn't bet against him, then the Falcons beat him. In a way, for me, the same principle applies to at least Tom Brady. He's got one more game to rub it in Roger Goodell's face.
Indeed.
Among other things. And this is kind of the Patriots MO situation. They've been doing this for so long. I'm curious as to which random Patriot that none of us recognize is going to come up gigantic in this game. Kind of like Hogan did a couple weeks ago in the AFC Championship game. And then the fun factoid was, what teams passed on him and cut him before he did this kind of thing? So I'm going to go New England in this one, 27-20.
Wow, you think it's going to be 20? You and Scott Petrak both think that the Falcons are going to be held that low, the highest scoring team in the league?
I do. I like New England's defense, and certainly I don't. I'm not a big fan of Atlanta's defense. We talked about a couple weeks ago in championship round when it was Packers Falcons, and we both noticed that. Hey, you know what? Statistically, these are two of the bottom tier defenses in all of football. That's why we thought that game was going to be a shootout. So I do think Atlanta can still get 20, but New England's been here, done that, and I like him to do it one more time.
All right, I'll tell you what, I think that is the X factor. As Scott Petrak broke down all of the offensive and defenses X's and O's, and I came back to the normal word we always talk about, intangibles.
There
the intangibles,
it is. Yep.
Not the tangibles, but the intangibles. The experience factor does matter to me. The fact that a really strong number, and I don't know exactly how many on the 45-man active roster for the Patriots on Sunday were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, but it's a good number. But obviously the most important players were there 2 years ago. Brady himself has been there now, as we talked about, will be the seventh time. Belichick has prepared for this game six previous times. I just don't think you can measure that in terms of points. There is a value in terms of points. I don't know what it is, but it's enough points to make the Patriots the favorite for me. I cannot see the first-timers with the nerves and the butterflies in their stomachs from Atlanta taking down this Patriots team that is, A, the best-scoring defensive team in the league. If anybody can find a way to mess with Matt Ryan, it's going to be Bill Belichick's defense. And, B, a team that is so motivated not only to win that fifth championship for Brady and Belichick, something that will probably never, ever be duplicated again, but also, as you pointed out at the top, to rub this in Roger Goodell's face, to make him hand Bob Kraft the trophy. With Belichick and Brady standing on both sides of Kraft, my God, that is motivation for them. I do think this will be a high-scoring game, though, and I think for Brady to win, he's going to have to hit 38, because I have no doubt in my mind that Matt Ryan and the Falcons will put up 34. I'm going 38-34. It will not be a last-second touchdown that wins it for Brady. To the contrary, it will be a 38, probably about a 10-point lead or so before the Falcons get their final touchdowns to pull within four, and then an onside kick that stops them, that they do not recover, that stops them from getting a chance to heroically go out with a win. So there you have it, 38-34. Patriots is what I'm picking, even though I am rooting for the Falcons, simply because it's un-American to root for the Patriots. That's all the time we've got. Thanks for being a part of it. We really appreciate the conversation. We'll see you Monday.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.